thanks so much for dialing our way here in Emory this afternoon. And it's time now for another edition of Farm Talk with Washington County, Virginia Agricultural Extension Agent Phil Blevins. He's here to answer your questions today, talking about poisonous plants. Let us know what you want to know. Give us a call at the station, 276-944-6933. And here now is Phil.
Thank you, Ivy. It's good to be back with everyone today. And I thought it might be a good idea if we talk some about plants that are poisonous to livestock. And if we get to it at the end, some that are poisonous to pets. And that's one of the more frequent questions that I get in the summertime, particularly when we get into stormy weather. And then in the fall, when we get into the season, when it begins to frost. And so I thought it'd be a good idea if we talked about them. Obviously, we can't cover every plant that's poisonous. As Paracelsus, the father of alchemy, said, sometimes the poison's in the dose. And so I don't want everyone to panic when I mention these plants, because sometimes it depends on the quantity that the animal eats. And then on the other hand, some plants are extremely toxic to animals. So we want to look at that today. And one of the things to consider is that really we need to be able to recognize poisonous plants and then properly manage the animals that are on pasture so that we can help minimize any potential for poisoning. And that's not something we hear a lot about, animals dying from eating plants, but it does happen occasionally. And when it happens to you, it's a big deal. It doesn't matter if it's very rare, but if it happens to you, it's a big deal. So when an animal goes off feed or loses weight or appears to be unhealthy, poisonous plants could possibly be the cause. Not usually, but sometimes they can be. And poison plants obviously contain toxic compounds that can injure animals. They may not kill the animal, but sometimes they can, even in small doses. Other times they may contain substances that end up reducing performance of the animal. For example, the endophyte in tall fescue that's infected can reduce weight gain, milk production, and in horses really cause problems with foals. And so other things are weakness or rapid pulse, and so we have to be alert to what's going on. And so I'm going to go through some of these plants, and then we'll talk about some ways to manage these things. But one of those that's pretty common in our area is bracken fern. We generally refer to it just as a fern. We see those growing in the edges of woods. We see those growing around buildings or in places that are maybe low fertility. And it's a perennial that produces spores and a thick, scaly underground rhizome or stem. It's usually found growing in groups. It's rare to see a fern outgrowing by itself. And if you're not familiar with what that is, on an established plant, the leaves or fronds, as they're called, they come up directly from the rhizomes and can reach heights as tall as 4 feet. They'll be from 1 to 4 feet tall. Normally, the ones I've seen are not that big. The leaf is a three-part or branched leaf that's composed of a lot of little tiny leaflets. And so the spores that spread this are borne on the underside of those leaflets in a narrow band. And so the conditions, when is it poison? That's always a question, because at some stages plants are poison, at some conditions they're poison, and others they're not. But unfortunately for the bracken fern, they're poison all seasons, and they're even poison when they're dried in hay. And so if you happen to be making hay in an area where there's a lot of ferns, then you need to try to avoid that place or either get them out of it, one. And if we look at the symptoms of what takes place, particularly we'll first look at cattle. You know, it's an accumulative type thing. It's not something that they go in and eat one time and then they're poisoned and die. It's usually something that accumulates over at least a month when they're grazing, if they happen to be eating ferns. You'll end up seeing clots of blood in the feces of the cattle. Sometimes you'll see the throat swell in the throat region of young animals. It can cause what's called aplastic anemia. And generally, they'll just be unthrifty with weight loss and weakness. And so if you see that and you have ferns, and the best thing to do is get rid of them, but go to the site and see if it looks like they've been grazed. And possibly that's what's going on. Now, in horses, it causes a loss of appetite. and what people refer to as stargazing, or they're just not with it. You know, they're not paying attention. They're not focused or anything. And what brings it on is it ends up resulting in a thiamine or vitamin B deficiency with the horses. And so people that have those animals need to be aware of what those symptoms are. And if you have areas where there are a lot of ferns, try to keep those animals out of those areas. One of the big ones, though, in our area is wild cherry. And I get calls about this every year. There's lots of wild cherries around here. They're found in forests. We really find them in fence rows. There's one of those that the birds eat the cherries. They land on the fence row, and as they leave, they deposit the seed with the fertilizer at the same time. And so you see a lot of wild cherries growing in fence rows because of that. I also see them out in fields sometimes. And most people know what a wild cherry is, but they do produce clusters of small black cherries after they've bloomed and actually produce the fruit. They're not dangerous when they're green. If the cattle were to eat the green leaves, that's not much of a concern. But when the leaves wilt, then they really become a concern. And so wild cherry is a fairly brittle tree. So when we get into stormy weather in the summer where we have really strong thunderstorms and really heavy winds, then a lot of times we'll see limbs break out of cherry trees. And when those green leaves are damaged, either by a limb blowing out or we cut the tree down or whatever the situation might be, they begin to wilt. And what happens in that wilt process is glycoside is converted into what's called hydrocyanic acid. And that should trigger a thought to you when you say cyanic. And we refer to it as prussic acid. And when cattle digest that or eat that and get it in the rumen, it produces cyanide. And it's deadly in those cases. And the other thing that happens when this glycoside is converted is it also makes the leaf sweet because it's broken down into this prussic acid and sugar. And so the cattle really like them at that point. And so that's a concern. Now, you'll probably talk to people that say, well, I've had cherries blow down in my pasture and I never had any trouble. Well, that's a possibility. Maybe the cattle didn't eat them, or maybe they didn't get enough to cause a problem. But it is something to be concerned about. The good thing about it is if we do have a problem like that and we can possibly get the cattle out of the field, after the leaves dry out, they lose this ability to produce this. They're no longer poison after that. And so we can turn the cattle back in at that point and not have to be concerned about it. And sometimes in some areas, it's just almost impossible to remove all the cherries, particularly on rented land where you may not have permission to cut trees or do things like that. And so we just have to do the best we can. And one of the questions that comes up sometimes is, well, I'll spray these cherries and get rid of them with a herbicide. Then if you do that, that can be done with smaller trees. Obviously, big cherry trees, that'd be hard to do with. But if you do that, keep this in mind, that it seems that spraying a wild cherry with herbicide makes the leaves more appealing to cattle when they wilt. And so they become more palatable. The cattle still go to them and eat them and still face that danger of being poisoned at that point. And so that is one of our bigger ones in this area that we have to be concerned about. And it's a problem anywhere that they're growing that livestock are associated with. One kind of a side note on that, in Kentucky, they've had problems with losing foals in fields where wild cherries are. And I think they've come to the conclusion there that the caterpillars that are in the trees, that the foals actually accidentally or out of curiosity consume, and the little hairs on the caterpillar create a problem. And it's not necessarily the cyanide that's the problem at that point. I know at one point, one year, they thought maybe it was the droppings from these caterpillars that were causing that. But regardless, if the tree falls and wilts, then it can be a problem. Another one that is common in this area are plants that are in the sorghum family. And some of those are Johnson grass. If you live anywhere almost in the South anymore, you're going to find Johnson grass. And it's in the sorghum family. Other plants that are in that family are sorghum sedan and just sorghum and sedan grass. And these are, a lot of these are grown for grazing. A lot of these are grown for pasture, for summer. They're summer annuals, with the exception of Johnson grass. It's a perennial. And so some of these summer annuals that have been improved are planted for grazing or to make hay with, or silage. And these are similar to the wild cherry. They're dangerous when the leaves are wilted or when the plant's damaged. And so just like with the wild cherry, when those leaves are damaged, you have hydrocyanic acid formed in the plant and are released in the plant and converted. And so when the cattle eat that, then they're subject to cyanide poisoning. And we do have that happen periodically, particularly in the fall. When we get into the fall of the year and we have a field that has a lot of Johnson grass in it, or maybe we have been grazing sorghum sedan or Sudex all summer long and we've let it come back, and then we want to turn the cattle in on it, or we've turned the cattle in on it, and then we get a freeze or we get a hard frost and those plants wilt, there's certainly the potential for cattle to die when they consume that. The other problem associated with that is not only are the wilted leaves a problem, but those young sprouts that would come back even after the plant has been killed, or apparently killed, it's not dead yet, by freeze or frost, and those young sprouts come back, and they're also highly toxic too. They have the potential to create the same problem. Now, if you're making hay, obviously that eliminates that problem. If we let it dry out, that's not a problem. One of the frequent questions I get is, if we make baleage or if we make silage with it, does that resolve the problem, or is there still the potential for poisoning? If we let it in sile, at least it's believed if we let it in sile for at least 2 weeks, then we can overcome that. That stuff's released and converted and no longer a danger to the cattle. And so, one of the best ways to get Johnson grass out of a pasture is to graze it, because cattle really like it. But if we're turning in on that in the fall, or if we're turning in on one of these summer annuals that we grow that are in the sorghum family, then we have to be aware of that. Another question that comes up is people that make sweet sorghum, is can I feed the fodder after I've squeezed the juice out of it to cattle? Well, the same potential's there. It's in the sorghum family, and so we've got those wilted plants, and someone's going to say, well, I've done that before and didn't have a problem. Well, I'm glad you haven't had a problem, but keep in mind that there is the potential there for cyanide poisoning if we feed that to cattle, possibly sheep and goats as well. And so, and this potential, because of the nature of it wilting and frost and so forth and freeze, it really increases in the fall. And, you know, if you have questions about that, you know, let me know and we'll see if we can find some more information that you need. But generally, that's what we're looking at when we're looking at that. So how long should you wait after it's been frosted on or you've had a freeze? Well, generally about 10 days or 2 weeks till the leaves dry out on it and you don't have wilted leaves anymore, then we can avoid most of the problems that we would find associated with that. All right, so another one that we want to look at are hemlocks. You know, there's a couple, not hemlock trees either. We're talking about plants. And poisoning with one of the ones that's more prevalent in our area is poison hemlock. You see it in a lot of places. There used to be a huge patch of it right here above Emory and Henry along the railroad track, but the landowners have got rid of it, I believe. But it's a tall plant. If you know what Queen Anne's lace is, it's got a top on it like Queen Anne's lace, or an umbrella type bloom on the top of it with multiple florets in it. It's in the carrot family, and so they have this really showy white flower, but it's tall with pale green stems with purple blotches on it. There's another one called water hemlock that's not as prevalent as poison hemlock is, and the most poisonous part of this plant is the roots. And so you wonder, well, how do they get roots? Well, when the plant's young in the spring, and cattle maybe pick at it or eat at it, and they pull those roots up, and then they eat those roots. That's the most poisonous part of it. Now, the young plant has some toxin in it as well, but if you were to pull one of those root stalks from poison hemlock or water hemlock up and cut it open lengthwise, you'd find some air cavities in it that are separated by, it looks like plate-like partitions of solid tissue. And in that area, you'll find drops of a yellowish kind of aromatic resin-like exudate that contains the poisonous alkaloid. And that's what we see. Though, when you see that oozing from those cuts, that's what we're talking about. It's toxic to cattle. And so generally, the leaves and seeds, if they were eaten in small quantities, would do very little harm, whether they're green or in the hay. But if they happen to be pulling them up, which they can in the spring, then they can be a problem. And so we're going to continue this discussion, but at this point right now, we'll take a little break, and I'll turn it back to Ivy.
Hemlocks and primroses, gently I fell into a dream. I dreamed I saw a pretty fair maiden, such beauty I never saw before. Her dress was bound round with hemlocks and primroses, so green was the mantle she wore.
You are tuned to WEHC Emory. It is now time for Farm Talk with Phil Blevins, and today's topic is poisonous plants. And if you've got a question for Phil, don't hesitate to give in touch. You can give us a call at the radio station, 276-944-6933, or email Phil at pblevins@vt.edu.
All right, thank you, Ivy. I want to look at a different problem that comes up with poisonous plants, and that's called photosensitization, or where the skin of white-skinned animals that don't have any pigment in their skin become sensitive to the skin and can become sunburned. And one of those that actually I had a call about several years ago, a guy had a paint horse, I believe it was, and he had problems with it sunburning when it was out in the sun. And it was from eating St. John's wort, which is actually an invasive plant that was brought here. We seem to be our own worst enemy sometime, but it was brought here, I think, from Eurasia and North Africa. And a similar plant, another plant that can cause that same problem, is buckwheat. Alsike clover is another one, which we don't have a lot of, and I don't know anybody that grazes buckwheat. But St. John's wort is a herbaceous plant. It's usually a foot to 2.5 inches or 2.5 feet tall. And it also has tap roots and short rhizomes. It has a yellow flower on it. And when animals eat that, it has a substance in it called hypersin, is kind of a common name for it, that causes the animal's skin to become photosensitized. And so when they're in the sun, if they have no pigment, if they have white areas of skin, then they can become sunburned. And if they eat enough of it, that happens. And so, you know, usually in the case where an animal is poisoned by this, they get sore on the white areas of their body. Sometimes those areas of the skin may raise up and slough off. And white goats can become severely affected and die from this condition. So it can be a serious thing if you happen to have that plant growing. And it does, we do find it place to place. Fortunately, animals don't readily eat these things, but sometimes they may be just an animal that's curious, or it may be a situation where there's not sufficient other feed for them, and they tend to eat these things. And so keep that in mind. Ivy?
Yeah, I have a question for you. So you'd think if Darwinism, survival of the fittest, is kind of how the animal kingdom works, that these animals would learn to know, okay, to stay away from this, and they teach the babies and that there would be more avoidance, just like there are with certain flowers and plants that we have in our gardens.
Well, there's, you know, animals are curious, and I think the way that they were, just by genetics and design, there's a range in any group of animals. You know, some people are stupid. You know, don't do that. You know, don't try to climb the rock without anything to protect you, but they do it anyhow, and they fall off and hurt yourself or die. And so you have animals the same way. You would think, don't eat that. It don't taste good. But acorns, if we get to talking about that, is one of those. Some animals don't seem to like them, but some of them just seem to get a taste for them, and they begin to eat them. And so that's the case with some of these weeds that we're talking about. Buttercups is one that's really common in our area. And buttercups can be toxic, too. And the problem that they can cause blisters on the skin or inflammation of the intestinal tract. And even cattle and goats that happen to be poisoned by buttercups can produce bitter milk in a reddish color. And so this toxic material that's in it volatilizes when buttercups dry, so it's not a problem if it happens to be in hay. And I don't know of anyone in the area that's had a buttercup poisoning, so don't panic. But if you do have buttercups, it's generally a sign of low soil fertility, not always probably. But it's something that we can take care of. And the good thing about buttercups is we can take care of them in the fall with herbicide. There's a couple of types of buttercups that we have in this area. One is called hairy buttercup. It has a fibrous root system. And the other one is called bulbous buttercup, which has a kind of looks like a little onion at the bottom of the plant under the soil. And depending on which one you have determines which way you want to go with the herbicide. But ideally, we get rid of those. If they do eat them significantly, then it can cause burning and irritation in the mouth and throat, which obviously is going to be a discomfort to the animal. And abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea can follow that. Sometimes it can cause kidney damage and excessive urine production, and then you might see blood in the urine followed by a decrease in urine flow. Cattle can suffer a drop in milk production as a result of it. Sheep may collapse if they're eating it. And pigs, if you graze pigs can show paralysis from eating it. And so it's a good idea to get it out of the pasture, out of a hay field. One that's not necessarily a plant poison, but it's associated with plants, is nitrate poisoning. And nitrate poisoning can happen with different plants. Grasses such as corn or sorghum plants can accumulate nitrogen, where they're grown under drought stress conditions with good fertility under them. It can also be a problem with pigweed and lamb's quarter, where they can accumulate nitrates in a drought stress situation and if there's significant fertility. And one of the plants that we have a problem with in areas where cattle are fed, which is high in fertility, is spiny pigweed. Now, cattle don't normally eat that, but that's one potential problem there in the drought conditions. If they ran out of grass and they begin to eat that, then you could have the potential for nitrate toxicity in a situation like that. And so, you know, the symptoms of poisoning on that are salivation, labored breathing, incoordination, different things. And ultimately, if it's high enough, it can lead to death. Sometimes the whites of the eyes get a brownish color to them. And so the symptoms usually occur, if they have nitrate poison, 2 to 6 hours after eating. I want to go on to one that I think is probably affects a lot of people in this area that they need to be aware of. And that's feeding ornamentals to cattle. You know, we're wanting to be nice to the cows across the fence. And so we've trimmed our shrubs and we think they'd like to eat this. And so we throw it across the fence. Well, don't do that. You know, send the trimmings off of shrubs somewhere else. And one of the most toxic ones we have is Japanese yew. And a lot of people have Japanese yews, and they're very poisonous to animals. There's lots of animals that die each year because of the fact that somebody trims a yew bush and they throw the clippings over the fence to the animals, just trying to be nice. And you end up with dead cattle or dead sheep. And usually it's within 24 hours that they die. And so there's these taxane alkaloids that are in these plants that are very poisonous. And there's no antidote for ewe poisoning. And usually the symptom of ewe poisoning is you find dead animals. It can happen. I've read of it happening before where they would find a dead animal and they still had the ewe in their mouth where they were chewing. And it's a very common landscaping plant, so you need to try to find that. And it takes a very little amount to kill an animal, as much as 0.1 to 0.5% of body weight can be lethal. One mouthful being able to kill a cow or a horse. And in symptoms where, or in situations, I should say, where that can be proven, then somebody's liable for that. And if it happens to be a high-dollar horse, then you really got problems, or a high-dollar animal. And so we need that, and they don't have to be trimmings. If they can get to the live plants and eat on them, the same situation occurs. It doesn't have to be wilted or any such thing. But when you trim your plants, just don't throw them over the fence. Send them to the landfill. Red maples are common when that's toxic to horses. And a pound and a half of leaves to 3 pounds can be lethal to horses. And so, you know, having red maples in the pasture or giving them leaves off a red maple tree is certainly not ideal. There's a family of plants called aroid, A-R-O-I-D, and they are especially a problem for pets. And they're not things that we normally see that they will go out in the wild and eat, but they're a problem because we have them in the house. Things like philodendron, dumb cane, jack in the pulpit, elephant ears, and true skunk cabbage are some of those. And they're very toxic to animals. They cause painful swelling in the mouth and throat. And even a small child, for example, if a small child was to eat those plants, could have similar symptoms. So what do we do to avoid these, particularly with livestock? And I've not touched the hem of the garment of how many different poison plants there are, acorns and other things. The best thing we can do is have good pasture management. If the cattle have got plenty of grass to eat, they're not looking for something to eat. You know, you get in a drought situation, pasture's overgrazed and there's nothing to eat, then they'll start looking around for something to fill their belly. And if toxic plants are out there, then we need to avoid those because those can really cause problems for them. If you do a good job, if you keep your fertility up, the other thing is that grasses a lot of times will outcompete some of these things. We need to watch in cases of drought with nitrate poisoning because nitrates can accumulate in those sorghum plants if we have them, or Johnson grass. And if that is the case, then we get a good rain, we need to give it a few days to where that nitrate is moved through the plant and we don't have high levels in the areas where they're eaten. The other thing is learn to identify poisonous plants. If you know what they are, then you can do a good job of going out and either excluding cattle from those areas or getting rid of them with a herbicide treatment or some way, or fencing those areas out, just like with acorns. Sometimes it's impossible, but if you can fence off the big oak tree or keep the cattle away from it, or the buckeye trees, that may be the best way to accomplish that. I realize that's not always possible, but we need to do the best we can. Sometimes we find out too late that we've got poisonous plants on the place, and then we're wishing we'd have done something earlier. So, you know, just take care. If you have questions about that, feel free to email me at pblevins@vt.edu or give me a call at the office. And again, if you have ideas for this program, please let me know and we'll be glad to try to address them. So, Ivy, thank you for having me with you today.
You have been listening to Farm Talk with Phil Blevins. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday at 1 for another edition. You can also subscribe to the podcast and let Phil know what you want to learn more about. Call us here at the radio station, 276-944-6933. This is WEHC Emory and WISE FM Wise.